Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
When our biggest programs are tax breaks, fighter jets, and new prisons, that is saying something about what is valued by that particular party. So, these are significant decisions to make.
That's the voice of SFU professor Dr. Marjorie Griffin Cohen. On this week's edition of Latin Waves, we speak to Marjorie about the current federal election and setting priorities for Canada. So stay tuned.
And someone who has been very actively informing our possibilities and the alternatives is Dr. Marjorie Cohen. She is an economics professor at Simon Fraser University and the author of many books. We're very happy to have her on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Sylvia.
Wonderful. Now, we are in what I would call a crisis in terms of political education and understanding of our society. We are facing an election coming up soon. There's going to be all these wonderful projects to ensure family security and development of our children. How do you take these promises from the political history that you know of this government in the past 10 years?
Well, I think they're being careful about what they're promising, and they probably will institute what they said they would, but what you have to look at very closely is what they're promising. It's very, very little. Basically, women are off the agenda. I know that the Conservatives are courting a women's vote, but they're not doing it by appealing to issues around equality for women. That does not come out of their lips in any way whatsoever. As you pointed out, what is happening now is that there's a focus on the family. And what the Conservative government is promising is some kind of relief for the family when they've balanced their budget. And they're not planning to do this until, for another 3 years. So that means that there will not be pressure on them when they form the next government, or if they form the next government, which seems highly likely, but they will not be pressured to do things immediately. So they're promising things like an ability to split incomes. This basically helps people and families who can afford to have one parent stay at home. The income splitting is for people with children under 18. So that helps families that are usually relatively well off. And it doesn't help families where people who have the same kind of income, that is, two low-income persons in a family, wouldn't help them at all. It doesn't help them to split their incomes and divide the tax between two people. So it's a big, big savings for people who make a lot of money, and it doesn't do anything for people who earn very little, and it does absolutely nothing for a single-parent household. So these are the kind of policies that are being put forward. They're not focused on women. They're focused on the family. They do very little to help what is a major problem for women, which is earning less than men do for comparable kinds of work. So this is where things have changed a lot in the last few years.
One of the things that always get brought up by right-wing pundits is that if we cut taxes for the rich, we will have an economic buoyancy that would create more jobs, and it will trickle down to people. And in Latin America, we say that they piss on us and the media tells us it's raining. And it's the only... So what is wrong with this analogy of the trickle down that hasn't seemed to trickle down very much the last 10 years?
No, it hasn't. And it's important that people look at what has actually happened. So this is the cornerstone of the tax cut idea, as you say. It's basically that reducing taxes for corporations and for the wealthy will actually stimulate job growth and will encourage them to invest more in the economy. Well, recently there was a very interesting study done by the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, actually just last week, but also a similar one was done by the Globe and Mail, not your left-wing, you know, newspaper. So they came to the same conclusion, was that the cut in taxes was very, very beneficial for the largest corporations in Canada, but basically they just sat on the money. They collected assets and they did not invest. And they did not invest in the Canadian economy for the last 10 years that one would have expected them to do. And also they did not create new jobs. So what happens is that jobs get created, investment gets stimulated when people are spending money in the economy, when people who haven't been able to before have money in their hands. And so we've known for a long, long time that when you put money into the hands of people who aren't in a position to save, that is the people who are the poorest, they're going to go out and spend it on food and shelter and clothing in their local communities. And that probably is the greatest stimulus that you can have. It's very important that we actually look at the effects of the claims that governments have from their policies. And we have very little follow-up on policy by government. They very, very, very rarely do reviews and said, did that policy work? And certainly this is one where it does not work.
Well, I think that as we go to the polls, we also need to be very aware of the kinds of policies that have been introduced by this government. The recent interview done on the CBC, one of the persons they brought up said that, you know, corporate taxes also help seniors because when corporations make more money, it improves the return on our pensions. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that connection between what kinds of investments are being promoted and the kinds of impact that this has had, not only on the move to do away with pensions in our society, the move to force entities who have pension plans to the employers to move to a diversified pension plan, and the impact that this would have long-term on people as they retire.
Well, one thing is very clear. The Canada Pension Plan, which is what people get if they have been participated in the labor force and they get a proportion of their contributions to that. This costs government nothing. It's totally funded by employers and employees. But that has lost its value over the years. It isn't expected to provide a living income for people when they retire. It's expected to provide about 25% of their income. But we have other things in Canada. We have the old age security, and we have a top-up for people who are very poor. It did at one particular time keep people out of poverty. It does not now. We have quite a few poor seniors now in Canada. Well, about 7% of people over 65 can be classified as very poor. And so that indicates that we have to do quite a bit. But what's happening is a massive, massive change in pension plans in Canada, whereas if someone used to work for a firm, let's say like Simon Fraser, as I do, there was a time when you would know what your pension was going to be when you retired. They would tell you, you would have a defined benefit. You would know when you retired, this is how much money you would get every year or every month. But Simon Fraser changed this, as a lot of firms are, more than 50% in Canada now, have changed this so that they don't define the contributions. There's no liability on the part of the company for the people once they've retired. What they do is to say, we'll give you a defined benefit. So every month they put some money into an account, your pension account. But whether that pension account does well or not is entirely up to the market. So that's why you will see a lot of aging professors around Simon Fraser University, because when the market started turning sour and in the whole global crisis of 2008, their pension plans weren't worth very much. And this is what is so problematic for many people, the uncertainty of what is going to be happening. And this is particularly problematic for women because they tend to earn less anyways, so they have less ability to contribute to pension plans, and their employers contribute fewer of them. So these are big, big issues, and what the conservative government is promising is really just more that will help people who are well off, like extra tax credits. You can save as much as $10,000 a year in a savings account, they say they're going to do, having not to pay tax on the interest. Now, most people don't have $10,000 a year to save, so you know who this benefits most.
One of the questions we need to ask ourselves is then, what are our priorities? If we as a society value the inherent value of every human being, shelter, food, education, ought to be a right, not something that it's a commodity and a privilege of those who can afford it. Under the conservative government, Harper has decided to invest tens of billions of dollars on F-35 fire jets. Now, in a study done by a Quebec firm, they discovered that a single fire jet could provide 6,400 social units of housing. Now, I ask you, which ought to be our priority, housing or more military?
Well, you know, I think that's fairly clear, and I think Canadians have said that's fairly clear. Spending more money on things that help people more is what we need. It seems as though the housing policy that the Conservative government is going to follow is basically build more prisons. And so these are the two we're going to have big deficits in the future, not because there's been a lack of government spending, but not because it's wrong to have deficits. I think it's okay, particularly when there's high rates of unemployment and high rates of poverty. But what is happening is, as you say, what kind of priorities do we have when our biggest programs are tax breaks, fighter jets, and new prisons? That is saying something about what is valued by that particular party. So, you know, these are significant decisions to make. And the tax breaks that are being given to the large corporations are quite enormous. They are as much as could fund a national child care program very, very easily. They could bail out a lot of the problems in the health care system. So we do have to worry about this, like what are the priorities around spending? It's not that this particular government spends less than other governments. It's been spending more. But the issue is, what is it spended on and who benefits from this?
Well, we know that at the federal level, the Harper government has not been serving our interests and obviously spending billions of dollars on a meeting, the G20 meeting, to hit people over the head with batons was not a very good use of our tax dollars, I would argue. But, you know, and one of the things that I want to challenge our audience to look into is, you know, these things have not been accidental. You know, the fact that we have lower wages, the fact that we have less people participating on the political plane, you know, demanding more services, demanding, it's because we're working three jobs and we're still not able to feed or clothe our kids.
Yes. Well, I see this particularly among students. I mean, I know students who are really, really struggling. They're working full time and then they're forced to take, you know, three courses a term because they can't have a student loan unless they do. So they're absolutely exhausted. And that has been a direct result of the expenditures on universities. This is both a result of what's happened provincially and federally, but the money has not kept pace with the demand for university education for students. And so as a result, they have to pay higher tuition rates. Part of this happened during the Paul Martin government when he was finance minister, and then they shifted the whole payments to the provinces from the federal government in such a way that there was not dedicated funding for post-secondary education. And this has become a fairly serious problem. We certainly notice this at SFU.
both at the provincial and federal government level, there is a big narrative about how inclusive we are, how accepting we are of all cultures, and how inviting we are to people coming to our country. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the policies of discrimination in terms of labor practices of bringing workers on temporary visas and scapegoating some of the problems we have on immigrants.
A lot has happened with regard to immigrants, and one is the cancelling by the Conservative government of the Family Reunification Program, which is, I think, a great hardship on immigrants. But you talked about discrimination in the labor force, and this is something that's very difficult. You know, officially, this is illegal. But in practice, if you have no way in which you can get any kind of help from government in order to make a complaint, then nothing happens. And I see this all the time with young people in particular. When they face discrimination or when they face bad treatment in the labor force, they're just forced to leave the job. They have no help. They have nowhere to go. There is no enforcement of this kind of anti-discriminatory actions. And, of course, we know in B.C. we've canceled the Human Rights Commission through this government. We have canceled the Ministry for Women's Equality. And they've changed the whole Employment Standards Branch. So if you have a complaint, you phone up, and they have what they call a self-help kit. And one of the first things it tells you to do is to confront your employer. I want to tell you, no 18-year-old experiencing discrimination is going to confront their employer. They can't do this. So enforcing legislation and enforcing the law is as important as having the law. And if it isn't enforced, then people have bad experiences. And this really has to be rectified. And this, you know, when we keep talking about smaller government, what it means is we have less ability to protect people in the things that government should be protecting people. It is their job to protect people. So that's what you're talking about. Smaller government sounds like a nice thing. People have more money in their pockets because they won't have to pay taxes, but they will also have fewer protections. And it's those protections that we absolutely need in order to prevent some groups of people from having truly terrible lives.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about, we were almost to the end of our interview, but you've written extensively about the impact that trade agreements have had in the displacement of people from third world countries. I wouldn't say third world countries, I would call it that disadvantaged countries by these trade agreements, and particularly the mass migration of people from Mexico to work in our fields as temporary labor. Can you talk a little bit about the response and the inherent injustice that this double tier of workers has created, where some workers can come here with no status, no papers, and be treated anyway, paid terrible wages, and many of them lose their lives, to the kind of naturalization that then it creates on the rest of the workforce?
Well, basically, the employers have convinced government that there isn't enough labor here, and basically, what they mean is there isn't enough really, really low wage labor. If they pay decent wages, there's enough labor because we have high amounts of unemployment. So what they do is to go to places like Mexico, where wages are very low, and they promise something like $5 an hour here. And this sounds like a lot to people who are earning very little then, but when they come here and have to experience certain kinds of terrible working conditions, and we, you know, a lot of these have been in the newspapers over the past years, then we understand the magnitude of the problem. They do not have the same kind of access to protection through employment standards, particularly agricultural workers. These are extremely problematic, but also increasingly workers in the tar sands area in Alberta. So we do not protect these workers. The employers tend to be extremely exploitative of them. They work long hours, they have miserable working conditions, and sometimes very terrible food. And they have little recourse except you know, some kind, only if it's truly, truly terrible, as the case of forestry workers I believe they were from Africa last year. They, you know, when they're terrible, terrible, then it gets some kind of attention in the newspapers. But just ordinary run-of-the-mill awful does not. So it doesn't get that kind of attention until people die, or until they are in such desperate circumstances that it can make front page headlines. But they need the kind of protection for employment standards that all workers have, and this needs to be enforced.
Now, after spouting all the failures the governments have made, I fear that people may be saying, well, why vote? Why bother? And why is it important that we participate and add our voices to the political debates and also to create change?
Well, creating change is always hard to do, but elections come, you know, very periodically, and usually you do have to work on issues for some time before in order to make them election issues. But there are clear choices now between, you know, Harper, what Harper wants, and what the other leaders want. So it's very clear whether or not they really do believe Harper's approach, which is, if you reduce the size of government and if you reduce taxes, everything will be better. Or you can have the other approach, which says, you know, we really do need to have some kind of more concerted way of living together and to provide for each other, just so that a lot of people don't fall into poverty, and those who are in can get out of poverty, and that we can protect people in the way they should be. So there are distinctions, there are choices to make, and people can make them. You know, obviously it's a very blunt instrument, the vote, but it does send some kind of messages. If most people indicate that they want to change, then it would happen.
Thank you so much for being with us. I just want to ask you, in leaving,
yes?
If the government were to invite you and say, what are to be the priorities for this next government, what would you say to them?
Well, I think that there are very serious issues that are receiving very little attention. One is climate change. What they're talking about, in fact, all the parties, is relatively minor adjustments, and I think we need to make major adjustments around that. The other has to do with Canada's position with regard to Afghanistan and Libya. You know, what are we doing there, and why are we there, and what kinds of policies are we supporting internationally? This has received very, very little attention, and these need it. The third thing that's very important is the renegotiation of the transfer payments with the provinces. Harper's trying to reduce the deficit, and he's not telling us how he's going to do that. And this could be very problematic, and we could see even less federal money going to the kinds of things that that they should be supporting provincially.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Take care. Okay. That was Dr. Marjorie Griffin-Cohen. She is a professor at Simon Fraser University in the Department of Economics. We reach her in Vancouver.
Around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, bright and early for the daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere.
It's a disgrace, this place is like a whorehouse. The crooked system's the pimp that got us working till we worn out. Storm clouds, so it's dark when I wake up. Same street, same run for the same bus. Same tramp with his change cup. But many pennies and tens and twenties ain't gonna change his day up. This train sucks, blood, you look familiar. Why do I know them tired eyes from somewhere in particular? Wait, nah, it was yesterday. You shoved me in the chest just to race to the top of the Escalade tour. We rats coming back for more. Happy to carry the weight till our backs are sore. Trapped in a system of capitalism that got us thinking that we have to take job just to make a quick buck. Why not live the life that you want when your dream's too big to fit further in that Burger King uniform? Forgot what humanity showed us. Now we walk around like robots till we go nuts. What strange is we all creative till age six. Then we start hearing the same shit from police, parents, teachers, television. Take the first steps towards a mental prison. Then at the end of your life, you're like Ross. I was doing time, but I wasn't even behind bars. Know what, blood, it's a very, very
yeah.
Maintain, feel the weight on my brain.
Yeah.
It's still the same, my brain.
very nervous. No one knew me. Hello, teacher, tell me what's my lesson. Look right through me.
Low key. From the time I was a toddler, tiny and small, I grew into a little monster in primary school. Another name on the list of registration. The teacher never listened, so I lived in desperation. By year six, I was sick of education. Not to mention wanting attention, but I'd sit in hesitation, scared to ask teachers questions, cause I was quick to test their patience. Soon as I reached secondary, different heads were hating. To teachers, I was already dead and buried, a product of the streets' devastation. Aggie and Fassies and fools and carrying tools. Why, it's a weak explanation, but I was never happy at school. Suffered from sleep deprivation. Teachers knew my type, they saw it in me, never used eyesight. Most pretend they're blind when the older youths and new guys fight. Got sent around to the deputy head when the back hit the grass. Went back to sitting class and dreamt about leaving all my enemies dead. Many tears were eventually shed. Up till now I didn't know what my memories meant. Many messed with me then, all the fights left my energy spent. Teachers need to fix up, this message is for everyone, but especially them. Intelligent kids don't grow unless they're mentally fed. In this
dead.
Life is cruel, blood, I'm tired of school.
Dead.
Your mind's a tool, don't play by the rules. My heart's bruised, but I still won't lose.
That was by Loki, a wonderful rap artist I just discovered this week, and I'm totally in love. So it's called Mad World. Mad World by MC Loki.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.